music session number 28645, rule 12.
So that started the war. All sorts of things happened, of course, during that time. For one thing, the British, as usual, said, oh no, the Italians aren't dangerous. We said, for goodness sake, put them in a camp. We know that they're hiding weapons and things. And no, the British didn't move, just like now. They're bringing in a whole lot more of these laws, and they're going to be able to appeal against them. And they've always been the same, the British. They always arrive too late to help their friends. There was a great saying during the period when the Chinese were amusing themselves by taking a lot of hostages. And they said, if you're taken hostage, pray that you're American. If you're not American, pray that you're French. If you're British, just give up.
So you had all these Italians roaming around?
The Italians were all free. Nobody was interned, nothing was done. So finally my husband made a really large row and went to see the commander-in-chief, and he said, this won't do, we're going to be murdered in our beds. So they did at last round them up, and they found gardens where they had guns buried, they had ammunition, they had bombs, they had everything all ready to take over. But fortunately, Italians take a long time to get going. So they'd taken just too long, and we got them. But it was a near miss. And then, of course, the Germans were moving up all the time.
Now, you were still looking after your family at this stage?
No, the governors looked after the family.
So what was your job at this stage?
I was working in the Free French offices. And doing underground liaison. Whenever. But it wasn't as severe as later on when it really was underground liaison. Because it was the only way we could get in touch with the army, but that was in the later troubles, just before we left Egypt. That wasn't during the war. During the war, we had underground work and information and so on, which we passed to the British. And then, of course, we were working towards Alamein. Oh yes, and we had two ships sunk in the canal. That's right. The Rani, I can't remember the name of the other one. And the Rani had her back broken, so she had one half going one way and one half going the other way. We went out and visited her and climbed up to the bows at an angle of 45 degrees. And there was the British Navy sent an absolute idiot of a young sub-lieutenant to attend to the business. And he hadn't the first idea what to do with a broken ship. No idea whatsoever. But we got out there about 6:30, my husband and I. And so we had a tug from Suez to pull the front half that way, and we had a tug from Portside to pull the other half, the stern half, the other way. And we managed to dislodge it and get it out of the way. And there was another wreck we had to get out of the way. Those were the only two they managed to wreck in the canal.
Now, what work did you do in the Free French offices?
Oh, paperwork. I can't remember details.
And what did the paperwork involve?
Well, just the usual army paperwork, and I suppose anything that an army clerk does. I really can't remember any details, except that some idiot girl came in with measles and I caught it.
And the underground liaison, what did that involve?
passing on information. But that wasn't so intense as after the war when we had the troubles in Egypt, and then I really did risk my life every time I took some information to the army. Because the army was shut up, the British government in its wisdom had shut the army, the navy and the air force up in their camps with a veto on going into town or meeting the canal company or anything. So somebody had to take information. That somebody was me. So I'd toss a coin as to, I had a choice of routes into the camp, one way or the other. So I'd toss up which one it was going to be and hope that that wasn't the one that was ambushed that day. Because they used to ambush the roads into the camp.
They being who?
Egyptians.
The Egyptian government?
Oh, just general Egyptians.
Right. But none of this happened, of course, during the war.
No, no, that was after.
So Alamein came along. What was the...
Well, then, of course, there was the fall of France. And...
France fell 2 years before Alamein.
Yes, I know. There was the fall of France, and this is pertinent to Alamein, because if it hadn't been for my husband, there would have been no Alamein. Where was I? Yes, the fall of France, and so then there was all this mess up as to who was going to be Vichy and who wasn't going to be Vichy, and the southern part of France was going to be, well, they said free, but of course it wasn't free. And the northern part of France was taken over completely by the Germans, and the southern half of France was ruled by Vichy and General Pétain. And the man who was representing the French, the main French head of the canal company, which was based in Paris, of course, and their representative was Vichyist. And he was going to hand over the workings of the canal company to Vichy. In which case there would have been no Alamein, because the British army wouldn't have been allowed to use the forts. So my husband, I said, not so but far otherwise. And he took over the canal and worked with the British.
How did he take over the canal?
Well, he just took it over. I don't ask me, that was his business. He didn't tell me how he did it.
He didn't?
Everybody just obeyed him. He was one of those people who do just take things over when it's right. Everybody admired him, and nobody admired the man in Cairo. And they just did as they were told. There were a few Vichyists in the canal company, and we just sent them to Coventry. We took no notice of them. They did their work, and that was it. But the main force followed my husband. And after that, he was in liaison with all the British forces, and he made Suez available for the landing of, well, all the logistics of Alamein. Otherwise, we would not have had Suez for Alamein. And the first place we'd have been able to attack would have been way along the North African coast. It would never have happened. And I had to fight tooth and nail to get my husband a decoration.
What did you get him?
CBE.
Did you? How did you go about doing that?
Well, as soon as the war was over, all the chairmen and people of the Suez Canal Company came out for their usual winter holidays, because they all used to come out from France and England, all these people, and enjoy themselves and stay at the residency and have a lovely time while it was winter in Europe. So as soon as the war was over, they came out for the first time. And I got to know the Hankies very well, Lord Hankey and Lady Hankey. She was a very nice woman. She had a lot of children, come to think of it. And so while he was doing canal work, I think they did a bit of work, but not very much. And mostly they just enjoyed the Egyptian winter. Anyhow, we were very friendly with the Hankies. And so one day I said to her, look, this is what my husband did during the war, and we've heard absolutely nothing. Nobody's even patted him on the head. And said, well done. She said, well, that's not good enough. And she said, I will speak to my husband. Of course, he was a privy councillor. And that was how he got his decoration.
Which I assume you have here somewhere?
No, no, I've given it to his son.
Have you?
But it was entirely due to him that the canal company cooperated and that we had El Alamein. Never forget those queues of lorries, miles long, going up to the front. It was amazing. One of them was drunk one day. There were 50 lorries in a row, going one way. And there was one drunkard at the back. And he decided he was going to pass the 50 lorries. And I, poor little soul, was coming the other way. Went right into me. Not pleasant. He got into trouble, but that didn't do me any good. Broke my nose. Still got a bump in it. Oh dear. Yes, they were very fortunate to have my husband. It's extraordinary, you know, I've noticed when I've listened to history programs and so on and so forth, how one person can alter the whole trend of history. It's amazing. It's a Scotch doctor, Scottish rather, sorry. The Scottish doctor who tended Friedrich, the emperor, the Kaiser of Germany, who was the father of the bad Kaiser. If he hadn't been an idiot and had caught his disease sooner, Friedrich wouldn't have died and there wouldn't have been a great war.
An interesting theory. Not one for us to debate here, I think. Suzanne.
No, but it's an interesting thing.
It is.
That one person can turn the course of history.
I think that is often the case. But whenever one goes into it in any depth, I think that most people are all part of a bigger tide of events, and it is in fact often quite difficult to actually pick out one particular person.
Yes, but in the case of my husband it was quite easy.
It
was quite definite that he led the Free French and made the canal available to the British.
Can I ask you this question? We've come roughly to the time of Alamein. You told me what you're doing. The governess is looking after the family. Your husband is doing Free French work as well as, if I can put it this way, his conventional day job.
That's right.
You are working in the Free French offices and doing a limited amount of underground liaison, but not much because that comes much later. Two questions for you, one personal and one general. The personal one is, were you ever approached by the British Secret Service, SIS I'm thinking of, in Cairo, or even by a Special Operations Executive?
No.
You never were?
No, I did it from the canal company end and the officer in charge in the local camp, in the big camp. It was a big camp. He was a colonel in charge of information.
My question was actually going to be, you would be quite privy to what the Free French were up to, which is something that the British Secret Service would be very keen to know.
Oh, I never gave any information of that sort.
You didn't?
No. Oh, de Gaulle visited us. I've noticed in all the programs about de Gaulle, they never say he visited the canal, and he did, because I sat next to him at dinner.
And of course, you had good French.
Yes.
Much better than his lousy English. What was he like? What did you talk about?
Just general? I really can't remember. I tried to make him smile because he swore he would not smile until France was free again, and he didn't. He was a rather dour man, but he needed to be. He had a very tough job. If he hadn't been as tough as he was, he wouldn't have done it. He was great.
In your opinion, he was great?
Mm. Definitely. He rallied the French. He gave them heart. Because they were absolutely devastated. They were in a terrible mental state, all the French. They were desperate. He gave them heart. That speech that he gave on the day of the fall of France was really magnificent. It gave everybody hope. It gave everybody a light in the future, something to hold on to. Because they were desperate. The French are a very proud nation. Very. They're very patriotic. It hurts them deeply if something happens to their country.
Yes.
Well, they were anyhow then. What they're like now, I don't know. I haven't been in touch with them personally for a long time. But I imagine they're much the same.
Let me ask you the other question that I was going to raise. And that is the...
The point I wanted to ask, Suzanne, was concerned Alamein. What was it like in Cairo in the weeks and months before the great battle in October?
Well, I wasn't in Cairo.
Where were you?
On the canal.
On the canal.
Ismailia, the headquarters of the canal.
What was it like then in that part of Egypt when it was obviously thought that the Germans, many people thought the Germans would...
Oh, well, we were all ready to move.
Were you?
We, yes, they got to the border. They ran out of supplies, didn't they? That was their trouble. That's why they didn't go on into Egypt. They ran out of supplies. Because just 10 miles further on and they had it. It was extraordinary. And they just stopped, praise the Lord. Anyhow, we were on notice to evacuate. There was a ship waiting in Suez to evacuate us to South Africa. In fact, there were two. And we were all packed. We were supposed to be ready to move in half an hour. My husband gave me a bag of sovereigns. And as I say, we were packed and we were, just poised to go. And we lived like that for... How long were the Germans there before we attacked? Alamein was in October, wasn't it? That's right.
2 weeks, I would think.
It was a long time.
Yes.
And the Egyptians in Cairo were dancing about and saying, this is wonderful, and soon we shall be living on the fat of the land, and they were selling German mementos, and it was all going on in Cairo. And we were just ready to leave, and one boatload left. And quite a few of the canal company families went on it. And it was torpedoed. It was either torpedoed or bombed, I'm not quite sure which, in the Indian Ocean. And it sank, and the people were eaten by sharks. Because I refused to leave until the last moment. I said, I'm not going until I absolutely have to. I think I could have dealt with the Germans, actually. But it was, anyhow, it wasn't tried, because I could speak German perfectly. There's usually a way around them. Anyhow, so that's happened, and then, of course, everything started to pour in from Suez, all the reinforcements. We had a little...